We'll be spending the entire evening. I will refer to some other verses, but I don't plan on turning to them. So you might want to make a note of those other references that I happen to make along the way. Also, not big on personal comments at this portion, but I do want to make one, and that is we just love being here, Sharon and I. She said, somewhere in here it looks like Paul and Velma Lou ought to be here. We know this isn't the building they've ever knew anything about, but oh, so many of you people, they did. And so it's just been a blessing already just to be and to remember and to stir up those happy memories, whether it was when I had hair still or whatever other memory it was. We're just having a good time and wanted to share that thought with you. In our daily reading, which if you followed the lesson this morning, you get that I put some emphasis on it. I want to make one small clarification. I don't care if you read the Bible through once a year or once every 2 years. I had a friend who read the Bible through once every 3 years. And what he liked to do was like to take a chapter, and he said, Clarence, I really just like to sit with that chapter and really kind of marinate in it. And I'm like, that's good, because there is no magic in a once-a-year reading schedule. They're real popular. We have three or four of them that we keep in our track rack. And, you know, it's a good thing. The only thing you got to watch out for in your annual reading schedule is it gets to be a checklist. Oh, I got to read 3.5 chapters, which is a rule of thumb, is 3.5 chapters a day, and you'll read the Bible through in a year. But you don't want to go there and just be chunking off chapter reading, you know, really quick. I'm a speed reader, you know. Got it done. Don't do that. So, you know, pick your own reading and give the emphasis on daily reading. And as you're doing your daily reading, the text that Brother Benny read for us, and that's going to be our text, that's a weird text, isn't it? Am I the only one? Have you ever read that and go, made the axe head float? What's that story in there for? And if you're not careful, what you'll do is, oh, well, it's history. Well, I think it is history. Let me be clear. I think that text is historically correct. I think it's historically accurate. I think it literally did happen exactly the way Brother Benny read it. I don't have any question about that in my mind. That's the way that worked. But now I've got to ask this question. Why did God put that in there? Why did God need me or you to read that passage and ponder it? And this is what I want you to do with parts of your daily reading, is whether you just like to read a paragraph. You know, you can sit with a 23rd Psalm, and if you're really contemplative and you know how to meditate and work these things out to different levels, you can literally spend a half hour with those six verses and still not be done. So, this is what I want you to do. I want you to take these passages that have that part to them. And, you know, incidentally, when you're in the genealogy passages, I have made some good lessons out of the genealogy text. I should have brought one because it'll blow your mind. But they're really not a good marinate passage. So you look at that and you go, well, what's going on? I want to find some deeper ideas here. And now we're going to get into some speculative area. I told Mick and a couple of you others, I said, now this morning's lessons were pretty heavy. Tonight's going to be a little more playful, a little more lighthearted. Because God never says to you, now the reason I put the story in there about the floating axe head is because I wanted you to learn. Wouldn't that be neat if God had given us a commentary on the Bible too? But He didn't. But He put it in there, right? And many, many of us would say God put everything in the Bible for a reason. Some of us will go so far as to say, and I think with all the translation this is pushing a little, but we'll say every word is in the Bible because God meant for it to be there. Now my response is, are you talking about the Old King James, the New King James, the American Standard, the ESV, or the Revised Version now? You know, when you take it that far, I don't know. But every story, absolutely every account. And so we're going to look at it, and what I'm going to share with you are my thoughts about what we can learn from the floating axe head. Now, I am not telling you that these are verbatim exactly the reason God put that story in there. And you might look at two of my points and go, I think Clarence missed that one. I may have. I don't know if you know it or not, but Brother Brian and I, we don't have a direct line. We don't get to text message God and go, hey, I need a little clarification on this passage. Sometimes we just look at those passages and go, I don't know. Let me see what pulpit commentary says. And that's not a whole lot of help either, is it? So, you know, so sometimes we wonder just as much as you wonder. And so if I give you an idea and you go, no, I don't think so, that's fine. As long as we're within general biblical limits and we're not violating any really Bible principle or truth, then I'm not going to argue with you much. I think you're nuts. You can think I'm nuts, and we'll have a good time with it. So you're reading your daily Bible reading, or however you want to do it. And some people like to do New Testament, Old Testament, AM, PM. There's a dozen different ways to do it. And here you are. You got the sons of the prophets, and they say, "See now, the place where we dwell is too small for us." Now I'm got to stop right there because I'm like, so what's that matter? There's some depth there. There is really some stuff going on here. And this little bit here, actually, I should probably read the first two verses, but that's okay. So you got the prophets and they have a school. What do you know about the schools of the prophets? Me neither. So I can go all the way back to Samuel, and that's probably going to be my earliest traces on the school of the prophets, but I don't know much about the school of the prophets. But I do know apparently they had something like that. I'm just guessing here, that they kind of passed it down from generation to generation. Elijah was the kind of the head of the prophet school, sort of, and we were a little on shaky ground there. And then Elijah, he got to ride in the chariot, which is totally awesome, and that left Elisha, and now we're with Elisha and the whole thing, so he kind of inherits it. And they've got this problem that they've outgrown their facility, which I think is a totally wonderful problem. I have never been with a congregation yet. Oh, that might speak bad about my own preaching. I've never been with a congregation yet that said, man, we can't seat the folks here anymore. We're going to have to go build a bigger building. That, you know, this is a great problem to have. And the one thing that stands out to me is I'm going to call them young men. And I'm just totally assuming Elisha's older and they're younger. I don't know that for a fact. But the prophets come to Elisha and they go, hey, we got a problem. And we got a plan. And that part right there, I go, yeah. So I heard a story once of a congregation that anytime you went to the elders with a problem within the local work, you weren't allowed to tell them the problem unless you had a proposed solution. Now, that didn't mean they had to follow your solution. That just meant you couldn't go up to the elder and go, boy, this is all wrong and this is all bad and this is horrible. What are y'all going to do about it? You had to say, this is all wrong, this is all bad, and now here's an idea I think that might address it, you know. And then the elders got to work with it from there. Isn't that wonderful when people take the initiative to have a plan? Instead of sitting around waiting, here's modern America, the snowflakes, the millennials. They would be going, oh, we outgrew our building. What are we going to do? They don't have an app for it on their iPhone. There's nothing on the internet about it. And they would just sit around and do nothing, waiting for Uncle Government to come in and do something. And boy, that'd get us on a soapbox, won't it? Get Uncle Government to take care of it for me. There's just not enough initiative. The prophets didn't have that problem. The prophets took their own initiative. They went to Elisha. They said, look, we outgrown our building. What we think we ought to do is, let's go down here and cut down some trees and let's build a new thing. Let's build a new one. And they did it. They just had a great mentality. Years ago, let me see, here's my glasses. Years and years ago, there was a little story that went around. Now, you've heard, this goes back at least to the 70s. And I'm going to tell you that let me just read my story. This is the little story about somebody, anybody, everybody, and nobody. And if you want a copy of it, it's typed out on the back of my outline. You can take a picture with your device or whatever. This is a story about four people named everybody, somebody, anybody, nobody. There was an important job that needed to be done, and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about that because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought anybody could do it, but nobody realized that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have done. Yeah, you know a church like that? I'm going to stop on that before I get in trouble. The prophets didn't have that problem. The prophets didn't sit around going, well, anybody can do it, and wait for everybody else to do it while they did nothing. They got busy doing it. In Titus 2:14, you know the verse, we are a people redeemed, zealous for good works. He redeemed us so that we would be His own peculiar people, and we would be eager to get out and do the work. And in the Old Testament, we have this little bitty story of some prophets who said, we got a project that needs to be done. We're going to get up and we're going to go do it. And I'm speculating in part, I know that, but I'm going to say they had the attitude that we're going to share the responsibility. I don't think they expected anybody to do more than he could do, but they expected everybody to do all that they could do. And this is a very big violation of the 80-20 rule. If you're not familiar with the 80-20 rule, look up John Maxwell, who is an awesome motivational speaker. He's in the denominational world, but he's going to stay clean on you. So I can recommend Maxwell as far as motivational material, because he don't do the nasty stuff like Anthony Robbins got all potty mouth. So anyway, that's bad stuff there. And he goes through this whole thing about the 80-20 rule, and he lays it down, and it's awesome, and it's right, and it's wrong for a church to do it that way. The young prophets didn't think that 20% of the people ought to do 80% of the work. They thought everybody ought to carry their own load. Now, I'm reading that into it, but they're good men, right? The young prophets didn't think that 20% of the people ought to give 80% of the money. They didn't think 20% of the people ought to do 80% of the visiting or the phone calls or the mailing of the cards. I'm telling you, they had the idea of, we got a problem, we got a plan, now let's go do what we can do. You can carry a tree that's this big, carry a tree that's big, this big. You're a great big old man like Luke, then carry a great big old tree. We don't care what you carry, but carry what you can. It's a shared responsibility. Isn't that basically what the parable of the talents is? Now, you'd have to go to Matthew 25:14. But if you got one talent, then use one talent. Who expects of the one talent man to act like a five talent man? But you got five talents? Then you need to use five talents. This isn't rocket science, is it? This is pretty simple stuff. I wonder what would have happened if the five talent man would have said, well, I'm going to bury four of them. I don't need to use but one. I wonder if his master would have still been happy with him. And so what I'm seeing here in the first part of my story, as I'm purely speculating, and I'm saying, why did God put that in there? What did Clarence need to learn from it? Well, one thing Clarence can learn from it is, if you got a good problem, you need a plan, and you need to take some initiative, and you need to work on the plan. You don't need to sit around waiting for somebody else to do it. Now, I realize that in a congregation, we've got elders, and the elders are the head of the congregation, but that doesn't mean that you can't go to them if it's a congregational thing and say, hey, I noticed we got a problem over here. What do you think about? And outside of the congregation, if you want to go visiting, make phone calls, send cards, letters, do a cottage study. Boy, that's an old word, isn't it? Have a private Bible study, set up your own personal Facebook page, do whatever you want to do as an individual. Do you have to go to the elders and go, hey, I've been thinking about having a Bible study with my neighbor. Would that be all right with you? And if you are that, if you do that, I'm trying to behave. If you were to go to the elders and say, Ron, I'm really wanting to have a Bible study with one of my coworkers. What do you think? Do you think Ron would ever look at you and go, no, I don't think that's a good idea. No, we don't do Bible studies here. He's going to go, of course, go. You know, how can I help you, maybe? Now, I'd be careful there, because you know what we do. Well, you come teach it. Well, no, that ain't you having a Bible study, incidentally. So you want to look it around. You want to see your problem. You want to get a plan. And then you want to take some initiative. And you want to work that plan. Now, let me go back to my text. I left my ribbon there. Look, fingers are getting old and pages are getting thinner. I can't get there as quick as I used to. So in verse 3, he said, then one said, please consent, go with your servants. And he answered, I will go. Okay. Why is that in there? I don't know. But here's what I'm going to tie to it. And it's what I alluded to this morning also. Actually, I think I pretty directly stated it. If you don't want God in your life, He's not coming into your life. If you say, God, stay out, I'd rather burn in hell forever. I don't think it makes him happy, but he did make us free moral agents. And if we don't want him in, he's not going to force his way in. I think the little story here about inviting Elisha to go along is just a little reminder that we need to invite God into our lives. We need to invite him into my morning, into my marriage, into my work, into every aspect of my life. I need to be sure that I am taking the initiative to include God in my life. Now, when I do take that initiative to include God in my life, he's going to come along. He's willing to be a part of it. Now, I've got to be careful, because when I say he will come along, I'm not saying he's going to sprinkle magical fairy dust all over your life. And so I wanted God to be part of my marriage, and my wife is a good godly woman, and she wants him there too. And that means that now we will never, ever disagree. You notice the Bible said God made a helper comparable to Adam. We are different. Women see different. There's a book called Men Are Waffles, Women Are Spaghetti. It's written by some denominational writers. I got it on my desk. I'm going to read it. But it just points out that we are different. And so there are going to be times that she looks at me and goes, "What in the world is that man thinking?" And there are going to be times I do the same thing. "What is that woman thinking?" So what I say, when you want God involved, get him involved. Amen. But don't expect him to be miraculously everything, because the differences aren't going to weigh. Incidentally, men are waffles because waffles have little squares, and men can only deal with one square at a time. Women are spaghetti because it's all, and women can do 100 things at a time and still be thinking about 14 others. Us men are great deer hunters because all you got to do is stand on the stand and look down the lane. And you can do that for an hour. After hour, after hour. Women can't do that. Women are sitting on the stand with their phone going, "I got to do the laundry. Oh, the kids got to be picked up." And the 14 deer walk past because they're looking at their to-do list. God made us different for a reason, and that's wonderful. And so that might be a good book to read, but I hadn't read it yet, so I'm not really sure. So include God in your life. And there's no place you can't include him. I do a screensaver with a little positive things. I make them all up myself. I find them from other authors or stuff. But one of them says, "Life's a living meditation." I don't know, that might sound a little woo-woo to you for a moment. But if you'll go read Ephesians chapter 6, starting at verse 5 and going down to verse 8, that's where he tells the employees, I say employees, it says servants, whether slave or free, to do your job as though you are doing it for Jesus. What I'm telling you in this statement is that you can invite God into your work. Not that your boss is going to change, wish that worked that way, but you can use your work as part of your spiritual training and your spiritual development, your spiritual awareness development at work. You got 8 hours a day to do your job as though you're working for Jesus. But you got to include him. All right, I used the word invite a while ago. You got to say, "God, I'm getting ready to start work today. I want you here." And then you have to be consistently aware, minute by minute by minute by minute, as you work through your day. And then it all just becomes part of your Christian practice. I did have a guy say to me once, and I'm rambling a tad, so excuse me. But he said, "Now Sunday, that's Sunday, right? Monday, that's work, right?" And he was wanting a big distinction between the two. Like, okay, Sunday I got to behave, but Monday through Friday, hey, we make money however we got to make money. That ain't right. So, let's go a little further. Verse 4. So he went with them, they came to the Jordan, cut down some trees. I got nothing for you there, I'm sorry. So I'm going on to verse 5. But as one was cutting down the tree, the iron axe head fell into the water, and he cried, "Alas, master, for it was borrowed." Okay, so we got an axe head, and it falls off the axe handle. And again, you got to ask, why did God put that story in there? Well, I don't know. Now, I'm guessing again. I think this really gets a little more powerful. If you want to cut down a tree, you don't need just an axe handle. You got to have some working business on the end, right? For you and I, our axe head, spiritually speaking, a little bit like an axe head, maybe you want it this direction. This is the cutting edge, right? This is what does, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God unto salvation right here. What if we don't have this? What if all we have is an axe handle? It's possible. Now, I got to get you to work with my metaphors a little bit here. But I got an axe handle. I'm not going to swing too long. You know me. I'm office guy. But you know, you're going to swing away and you can make a lot of noise. You can have a lot of action. You can make people think you're doing something. But if you don't have the axe head on there, you're not doing anything. And that's the way it works in religion. I would use Matthew 7:21-23. Let me quote just verse 21 for you. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father. That means you're doing what God wants. You got the axe head at the end of your handle, and you're really doing the work God wants done. Now, you can read the rest of that because they weren't really doing the work God wants done. I think what happens sometimes is a group gets a lot of folks together, and we, because we're so small and human and feeble and just there's a lot of bad stuff about us, we're impressed by numbers. You know how it is. Brian knows this, I know. How many times does somebody go, oh, how big's your church? Of course, the first thing you want to go, well, that ain't my church, you know. But no. Anyway, they want to know the number. Now, if you say, oh, we're about 35, they kind of go, oh, how quiet, isn't that cute? Look, they're playing church, they got 35. But if you can say, oh, we got 180, 200, 500, you know, at some point they go, wow, you got a real church. We're impressed by numbers, aren't we? So, a lot of folks think if we get a crowd together, then we got something God's happy with. No, a crowd don't mean nothing. You can get a crowd at a ball game. You can get a crowd at a circus. You can get a crowd at a good feed, right? Yeah, that's real easy to do. Crowds don't mean you're doing the right thing. And so there are a lot of religious groups, organizations, who are making a lot of noise. They're just swinging an empty axe head. Now, you know, they may be doing some benevolent things like the Lions Club. I think Lions Club's a pretty good organization. They like to help people with visual-related things. The thing about the Lions Club is they don't claim to be a religious organization. They're not claiming to swing the axe head of God's Word. But we got a lot of groups out there claiming to be swinging the axe head, and they've just got an empty handle. They're not swinging nothing, but they're making a lot of noise. But they're not really with God. They've lost their axe head and don't even know it. Now, I'll let you decide which of those groups are, and I won't go into a lesson along that line right now. Now, let's bring that down to a personal level. So, in my personal life, I want progress, I want advancement, I want to get my spiritual black belt or get my spiritual PhD, however you want to word that. And this is a good little thing to just ponder sometimes. From preschool, and I mean that thing before kindergarten, and then you got kindergarten, you got first grade, then you got 12th grade, and then you get your 4 years of college, then you get your other 4 years if you want to go to your PhD and your grad school and all that stuff. On that big spectrum, where are you? Really seriously, in that private place of your heart that you're not going to tell anybody, where are you? Now, if you've just been baptized, you might be way back there in kindergarten, first grade. Nobody would argue that because everybody's got to start there. So that's not a problem if that's the place you're supposed to be. But in all honesty, there's some folks that have been just making a lot of noise and swinging an empty axe head, and they're still in first, second, third grade. And they're kind of like Jethro Bodine off the Clampets. Some of you are going, Jethro who? Off the what? Yeah. That was black and white, actually. That's going way back. You know, so he's like, you know, big stacky guy, and he's still in sixth grade. And so this is what happens. You know, people just, they're not really making progress. They're really not accomplishing anything because they haven't really been swinging the part of the axe they need to be swinging. They've been swinging an empty handle. And so what we got to do on a personal level is we got to come into ourselves and you got to ask the tough questions. You know, what do I need to be doing for me? And this is very serious, but even for me, I ask myself from time to time, where am I? Where am I on that scale? Where am I on, if you'd like to do the black, white belt to black belt scale, you know, there's just a lot of different ways you can do it. But where am I? And if I'm going to be lost, if I go to hell, Why would I end up in hell? You know, my personal weakness. I'm not getting ready to share all that with you, but this is your quiet, reflective time. This is your meditation time. This is, you know, am I just swinging an empty handle or am I really doing the things I need to be doing? Because if you don't stop and ask those questions, how do you really know? Because we do something that, I don't know, it's really bad, but we love each other. You know, we hug each other. I told Carl, man, you're doing a good job on the songs. And I don't know if I'm good enough to say anything else. He said, okay. So, but you know, we never just walk up to somebody and go, you know, Carl, man, I love you. But it just seems to me lately your attitude hadn't been right. Do we need to talk? Oh, I got to do it. I got 10 minutes. I'm watching the clock. One of the things I love about prison is we cut to the bottom line. We don't play the games we play at church. At church, a lot of times, and I don't know about Carl personally, but at church, if I were to walk up to somebody and go, you know, something just don't seem right. What's going on? You know, a lot of times people bow up. You can't talk to me like that. You know, well, maybe I can't, but the shepherds ought to be able to. They ought to be able to walk up beside any member and go, you know, something just feels out of balance right now. Do we need to talk? Do we need to study? Do we need to pray? What's going on in your life? In the prison volunteer work, it can get pretty blunt and brutal sometimes. But I love that part. So I got an inmate friend that's been out for 8 years or so. I met him the first day he was doing time at Cummins, and I was my first time to volunteer at Cummins. And he laughs at me to this day. He goes, you were just as scared as I was. And I said, Brad, you're right, I was. But he said, but you were going home. And I was. And Brad had to do 8 more years. Brad's a wonderful success story, and we have actually had him in our home. Sharon knows Brad. We've had him spend the night, and Brad has come out, and he's stayed clean for 8 years now, and it's just a wonderful success story, which we don't have a whole lot of those, but actually it's been more like 12 years that Brad's been out and kept himself where he ought to be. But I talk to him. I call him now and then. And one day, I'm talking to him on the phone, and there's that little voice in the back of my head that goes, something ain't right. You know, something's just not working here. And I rolled it around for a day to try to be sure that it just wasn't I ate bad Taco Bell or something. And I finally got back in touch with him. I just said, Brad, what's wrong? I was talking to you yesterday, and there was just something in your voice that just told me something's not right. What do we need to talk about? And he said, man, you're right. And we had a wonderful conversation, and he told me what was going on. He was going up for some parole review and stuff, and he was just stressed out to the max. And he just needed somebody to talk to. And that was wonderful. It gave him someone to vent to, talk to, that noticed somebody cared. And since we have this unique relationship, I can walk up to him and say virtually anything, and he can do the same to me. I really think one of the things that's missing in our churches so much is that frankness. Now, I'm not talking about being rude. I was not rude at all. You know, be rude to inmates, they'll kill you. So it doesn't happen because we're not rude, but you know, you're not rude to them. But there is just a cut to the bottom line bluntness that says, look, I don't know what I'm feeling, or I don't know what I'm seeing, or I did see, and I heard what you said, and that ain't right. You know, what do we need to talk about here? So much that happens in churches is it's a good old boy system. And unless you figure it out yourself, you may not get help. And I ain't bragging on us now. I think church needs to be a place, and I've left my text incidentally. I think church needs to be a place where we can come in, and I don't want you to come up front and do all your dirty laundry in front of everybody. I oppose that. But church needs to be a place where you can walk up to pick your elder, you know, or pick two or three of them. And let me just use a male example because this is so common. And say, Ron, Joe, we need to talk. I got a problem. Can we have a little privacy? And we sit down and go, internet and porn's got me, man. I've been doing stuff I ought not to be doing. Now, at this point, I don't need Ron and Joe to go, what? Oh, no. You need somebody to say, we do need to talk, don't we? We need to figure out what's going on here. And hold you accountable and still deal with you, but not shove you out the door because you've done something so sociably unacceptable that we don't want to deal with it. Or maybe it's the bottle, or maybe it's weed, or maybe it's been that, you know, I haven't been treating my wife right, and I know I haven't. I talked to her, so I don't know why she's still with me. And I want to quit this. Help me. And then you need some men who have the ability to hold your feet to the fire and love you at the same time. And on occasion, you need the ability to have a place where you can just bring your hurt and plop it out there. Now, again, I'd be really careful with just letting it out there for everybody to see. But we have a member. He's 85 years old, 83. He's retired military, and his wife has Alzheimer's. She thinks he is her daddy on occasions. She sees things in the room nobody else sees. And what I love about Orland is he'll just say, "We need to talk." And he'll grab the elders, he'll grab me, and you're just right there in the foyer with everybody walking by. And then we try to encourage this better environment, and then we'll make an extended announcement. And we'll just say, "Brother Orland was talking to us today, and he's telling us that Miss Mary's got this, that problem." We'll do some details. And Orland, bless his heart, he sit there and cry, and everybody hug him and support him. You need that place. You don't need the place. I had a friend who always detested this statement. "Time to go to church. Get your game face on." Oh, I want you to behave when you're here, and I don't want you to drop your laundry just anywhere. But at the same time, it needs to be a place where we come and personally grow. Because if I'm not really getting the axe head applied to where it needs to be, then I need another set of eyes to help me apply it. I really do. Let me take one more minute and do that one. So this is really funny, but I'm going to share it. I started taking karate. I'm a white belt. They had me doing somersaults the other day. I'm like, "I hadn't done this since the sixth grade. Are you serious?" And my instructor, sensei, said, "Sure, no problem." I was doing somersaults. He's 10 years older than I am. He gives me a discount because I'm a chaplain in the prison. I pay $30 a month for that man to tell me what I'm doing wrong. I do not pay him $30 a month to blow smoke up my skirt and tell me how great and wonderful. Come on, I'm 60 year old. I can't even hold my hands right half the time. You know, there's all these little techniques. And you go, no, not that way. And I go, "Thank you. Because there's a right way. If you do it wrong, you'll break bones, you know. I don't want to do that." And so I pay this man literally to teach me and stare at me and tell me what I'm doing wrong. I know what you pay Joe and Ron. Who's the other elder? Carl? Yeah, y'all need a double in pay. So let me use Brian as the example. I don't know what you pay him, but I know you pay him more than $30 a month. What do you pay him $30 a month to do? Sit around and tell you how wonderful and great and perfect and you're just the best Christian that ever hit the door. Boy, you're great. Now, when you do good, my instructor tells me, "Hey, you did that right. That's good." And when I do bad, he goes, "Oh, no, that was ugly." And he corrects me. That's what I'm paid to do, incidentally. As a teacher, I think that's what Brian's paid to do. I think that's what the elders are paid to do. And incidentally, your pay's even better. So that's all great. And so, again, to get that other set of eyes, let me segue back to my axe head example. I can't always see where I'm putting the axe head because I'm dealing right here and I don't have eyes that can turn around and look. I do get a video. And so I'm going to look at that to see if I pick my nose or anything while I'm preaching. I don't think I do. She would tell me. But I need those other eyes to come up beside me from time to time and challenge me or encourage me. And there's nothing wrong with the encouragement. Preachers need some encouragement. But, or to say. I tell a story on Joe. I was still working at Edwards. You were at the post office. I was learning to preach. Joe come by the Edwards Funeral Home to visit with me, actually to give me some advice. And we went to one of the, wasn't a stateroom, wasn't a body in it, but went to another room to talk. It was a good, wonderful conversation. And Joe, in the process, said, "There's more in the Bible than just baptism, don't you?" Well, what's a young guy do? Gets hung up on one thing, right? And I said, "Well, I think I do." But, I went home and I still remember the story because I never thought bad of Joe for telling me. That's right. Years later, I had another man come by my office once. I was in my 35-ish then. And he said, "There's an Old Testament, don't you?" "Well, there is." And I got to looking back at my preaching. And apparently, I didn't know there was an Old Testament. You see, you need somebody. We all need that somebody. Because this is a really complicated thing we're doing, the straight and narrow. and I can't do it all by myself. Yeah, theoretically I could, but you know, we got a family, we help one another, and that's what we need. So we got that. Now I want to go to the last point, and I'll do this one quick. If you have the old King James, this is great. The old King James 1611 authorized version said, "And the axe head swam." I like that so much more than it floated. It swam. What are you going to do with it? Swam. And so you got the Jordan. I don't know how the current was flowing or anything, but the guy didn't have to go chase it down. So the axe head, I'm using as an analogy of God's word, swam up to the man. Now, I don't know that for literal, but I do know it said it floated. That's what most of them say. You got it, swam. If it did swim, where did it swim? Away from him? Did he have to jump out in the Jordan and go chase it? No. Elisha said, pick it up. So if it did actually move, it came to the man, swam to him. And what I would do with that, and I realize how speculative that is, but what I would do with that is God is trying to get to us. God has done everything short of violate your free moral agency to get you to bend over and pick up His Word and take it into your life. Now, He won't violate your free moral agency, but He's done everything short of that to get the Word in your life and to get you connected with it. But it takes two. If that axe head did actually literally swim, I'm like, I ain't picking it up. You know, Carl, you pick it up, you know. No, I'm not. If it did actually swim to him, it wasn't going to jump back on the axe handle by itself, was it? I'm kind of thinking, well, if it swam, maybe it will. No, you got to bend down, you got to pick it up, and you got to do your part. And that's what we have to do, is we're involved. Now, I don't know what all you want to make of that story, and there's the thing about it being borrowed, and we won't go there. My time's up. But it's a fascinating story, and yet it's quirky and weird. And I think you just need to stop and read it, turn the TV off, and read it, and go, why God put that there? And then start making up your own list of ideas. And you can come up with some better ideas than I did, some different ideas than I don't. But you'll come up with some good ideas. And as long as you're within biblical parameters, I'm not going to argue with you. I might think you're weird, but I'm not going to argue with you. And then you can use that word to continue on your spiritual journey. One other thing, and I will quit there. The prophet was a godly man. But he lost his axe head for a moment. Just because we got a good start doesn't mean we won't stumble later. And when you stumble, you need to go back and find where you lost your axe head. Your word, your power, your cutting edge. And you need to pick it up. And you need to put it back into your life. Now, all of us here are probably in one of three categories. You've never picked up the axe head to start with. In which case, you need to be baptized tonight before we leave the building. Some of you have picked it up, but you've lost it. And you hadn't picked it back up yet. You're just swinging an empty axe handle. You need to quit that. That's crazy. That's going to wear you out. You need to get back with the real deal. And some of you got it. Some of you got the axe head on the top of the handle and you're doing exactly what you're supposed to. To those of you who fit that category, help the rest who need help. But don't get too confident, because even somebody like Peter could lose his axe head now and then and play the hypocrite. That'd be Galatians 2:11 if you want to go look at that story later. Where are you at in that? You doing good with God right now? Stay the course. You've lost it and wandered away, and it's time to get back on track. Then get back on track. You never got started yet. Then it's time to get started. However we can help you, let's take care of it now while together we stand and sing.